No, wait a minute. Come on.
Oh.
You got to guess what I've eaten
You
first.
Instructed me, and then I pressed record, and I did it, and then you said, no, wait a minute. Guess what I've eaten.
Right. So we'll do, you guess. I missed
what you've eaten.
I missed the episodes where I just cold started, guess what I've eaten. And
sure.
I've eaten particularly egregious things today.
Yeah, I can hear the mouth is smacking.
It's smacking
like you've been on an episode of Hot Ones or something. It's filthy. That's what it is.
You care to...
Well, whatever you've eaten, it's dehydrated your mouth. There's probably some alcohol in there, let's be honest.
Come on, let's be honest. Let's take a long, hard look in the mirror.
Have you been eating chocolate?
Yeah, chocolate for pudding.
Oh, fuck me,
and cool blue Doritos to start, and then a Twix, and it's all been polished along with some Hazy Janes.
You sound bad. And lucky me, you're not going to treat your mouth at all, are you? You're going to leave it there so that everyone can hear. Click, click, click. And you know what will happen? 90% of the audience, they won't even notice. They won't be able to hear it. And then even though we've mentioned it here, they'll go, I don't know what they're talking about. They'll forget immediately. And then you'll go, see, it's fine. But me and 10% of the audience will literally want to be dead when we're listening to you. And if it was me, I'd never listen to you again.
It's good that that's a bang on use of the word literally, because if you just said, I wish I was dead, mm-hmm. that's a figure of speech in a way.
Sure.
But
I made it real.
That's the only time, if you don't want to misuse the word literally.
Sure.
If you're not saying a figure of speech, never say it. But if you're using a figure of speech, but you literally mm-hmm. mean it.
Yeah,
I wish I was dead. No, I literally meant... You literally meant you wish you were dead.
I meant it so that I didn't have to experience that.
Exactly. And I literally wish you were dead as well.
Right. Me and my hydrated mouth.
I told you to...
And my mic technique.
Mr. Mic Technique. Oh, this is like a little flashback to the good old days when I didn't know what I was doing and...
What? Sorry, hang on.
So I told you to watch. You had a bit of time today. You watched. I told you to watch Shape of Water because you wanted to chat Sally Hawkins.
Yeah.
Further down in the line in this episode, in the future, and you didn't seem to have seen enough. So I said, "I'll do watch Shape of Water."
Your memory of this conversation is funny, isn't it? It's very interesting. In your mind, in the way that you tell the story, you're in the driving seat. You're the director of this little exchange we had.
Yeah.
It's like, you said, how many Sally Hawkins films have you seen? I told you, you said, that's not enough. Watch this one. Whereas what actually happened was I said, I've seen quite a lot of Sally Hawkins. I haven't seen Shape of Water, though. And I said, is it good? Is it worth watching? And you said, yeah. And I was like, okay, I will then. That was your only involvement. It was crucial, vital, important, but it wasn't like this big director of cinematography that you make it out to be. Yeah, not you as the auteur of my Sunday.
It's a film. It's a film, but it comes back to the theory that I struck upon a couple of episodes ago. And the more I think about it, you know how I say a thing, I like to figure out what I think.
Yeah,
I really
as you're talking,
This feels like it's getting more heft to the theory.
Remind me.
The idea that a film gets a stink on it because it was successful critically and particularly winning Oscars. I asserted that theory initially with Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah.
It picked up a pace with Silver Linings Playbook. That was the next time I mentioned it. And here we are again with Shape of Water. The space between it getting shit on and like people saying, what? Why is this? Why is this won an Oscar? She's fucking a fish. Was so short between it winning. And so I never watched.
To affirm your theory, I wrote down here in my notes, I'm very glad I waited 6 to 7 years to watch it after all of that hype.
There you go. That's how to do it. And I think I saw it maybe 2 years ago. So do the maths, and that's...
You waited 4 to 5 years.
Four to five years. And I watched it, and I thought, this is a perfectly lovely, odd little Guillermo del Toro film.
Oh, it's delightful.
So you tell me about your Sunday that I auteured.
Yeah, well, the Sunday of mine that was auteured by thine went as such. I watched The Shape of Water. We've done that bit. I thought it was surprisingly good. I do agree with you about my level of expectation. If I had watched it around the time that it won those Oscars, I think I would have been one of the merry band saying, what? She's fucking a fish. Today, I was saying, oh, she's fucking a fish. That's nice.
It's nice, isn't it?
It's really nice. And to tell you what, Richard Jenkins, born for the role, fuck me. You know the guy who plays her best friend who lives next door?
Yeah.
I've seen him in many, many things, mostly in comedy films. He is delightful in this film. And he does the voiceover at the beginning and the end as well. And he's a very gentle performance. And I thought it was lovely. I really enjoyed it. Well done, everyone involved. Well done, Guillermo del Toro.
Wait a minute. Well done, me.
Wait a minute. Well done, you, for auteuring my Sunday. Yeah.
You didn't.
And now it's okay for me. I'm now an adult when it comes to talking about Sally Hawkins rather than just a baby. Although I guarantee you that one or two of the films on my list that I've seen of her, you haven't seen. So, you know, we'll come to see who's the adolescent in this Sally Hawkins relationship.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to.
Yeah. Maudie, mate? Seen Maudie? No, you haven't, have you? Of course you haven't.
Why would I watch Maudie?
Yeah, that's your defence, isn't it? That's always your defence when you haven't seen something. It's like, I've chosen not to, though. It's not like, if I haven't done it, it's because I've made a conscious choice not to.
Yeah? Everyone is listening going, yeah, why would anyone watch Maudie?
It was good. I like Maudie.
Great. Listen.
It wasn't that good. It was fine. It was fine.
Would you recommend The Shape of Water in like casual? If something cued you, what would it take you? You're having a conversation with someone about, yeah, and they say, I saw blah, blah, blah. What would the blah, blah, blah have to be?
I would. There's three routes to recommendation for me for the Shape of Water. Route number one would be if we're having a conversation about Oscar-winning films that people haven't seen, you know, ones that won the big Oscar, but that may have passed them by for whatever reason.
Can I quick, great first?
Can
answer.
I great first? Can,
that's a great first. Can I mm-hmm. then say you're Mr. Oscar though? You're Mr. Oscar season. You're Mr. Uh-huh. Mr. I love films, and in the lead up to the Oscars, I like to. Mr. This is all in the first person, by the way. So when I say I mean you.
You mean me? Yeah.
I'm Mr. I must watch all the things, and I must be part of the conversation. Why you didn't watch Shape of Water?
Sorry. The second part of it isn't at all. I have no desire to be part of any conversation.
Yeah,
what I have a desire to do is to watch as many of the Oscars films as I can and then watch the Oscars. That's it.
Okay,
that's
fine.
That's where it ends.
That's okay, that's the story you tell yourself, okay?
Well,
it's The Shape of Lies.
Yeah, okay.
If it hadn't have been in that convo,
I wouldn't have watched it.
6 years ago, Joe,
yeah,
would you have... If it had cropped up, you wouldn't have watched it. But say it gets put on and you watch it. Would
sure.
6 years ago, Six years ago, Joe, mm-hmm. would he have been pleasantly surprised and liked it too?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, pleasantly surprised because I'm not a Guillermo del Toro fan. I don't
Why?
Hold anything against the director.
Ricky Young
personally.
Was saying this very thing.
Yeah.
What's all this?
I'm not particularly interested in his style.
Magical realism? Is that...
Magical realism, I'm not a super fan of. I don't really love models, and I'm, you know, he has tinges of horror throughout his work, and I'm not really interested. It's not a scary thing. I just don't care about it. I watched Pan's Labyrinth, and I was like, yeah, okay.
Scared.
You know?
Scared
No, not scared. Not scared.
Yeah, scared.
Not cared.
Too scared.
Yeah? Not scared, not cared. Anyway, I've seen one or two Guillermo films that I've thought, hey, that's very good. I think this is my favourite Guillermo del Toro.
You're still yet to watch Nightmare Alley.
Nightmare Alley. I don't think I've seen that one.
I insist that very early on in this podcast, I did tell you that was one of my films of the year.
Oh, so I guess it turns out you're not really the auteur of my Sundays.
Demonstrably not. So what's point number two where you
point number two would be...
Wait a minute, because we had such a diversion. what's
I think this people is, remember.
This is me now being Joe. I'm really in your headspace today.
You're explaining it to the audience. Yeah,
yeah. What's point number two where you recommend Shape
point
of Water?
Point number two? What are you... Remind me what you're referring to.
Point number two of yeah? you recommending Shape of Water to someone.
Oh, if yeah, no, if it was, I remember from earlier in the show when we were, okay, my bad. Point number one, just a recap of point number one was.
What the fuck?
I've come in hot with a lot of energy today. I'm ready. It's 8:30. I just had a hot chocolate. My wife bought me a Velvetizer for Christmas. You heard of this? You know what a Velvetizer is?
Is that something you put on your body?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you put it on your body. No, it's a it's essentially a hotel chocolat. It's that that's, I don't know if that's an international or just British chocolate brand. It's their attempt to make hot chocolate an adult affair. That sounds rude. Make it for adults, yeah. Because hot chocolate, it's sort of you know, I'm a man who doesn't drink tea or coffee. Okay, let's start there. I don't drink tea or coffee. I don't like the taste of it. I think it's weird. And I think I've said to you before, it's always embarrassing to have to ask for a Coca-Cola or a tap water because I am a child. So Hotel Chocolat, I think, have tapped into this market of millennials and Gen Zers that are the same as me. And they've built this contraption, a lovely, lovely little contraption. Anyway, you put milk in it and then you get these little chocolate shards, little flakes that come from Hotel Chocolat. And you pop it on, takes 2 minutes, it spins it around and it froths the fuck out of it. And then you put it in one of these mugs that they give you, which are all nice and make you feel nice. And it's delicious. It's the best hot chocolate I've ever had. So I've been having them, you know.
all the time.
Just to be clear, though, for the audiophiles in the room, I did drink some water afterwards to rehydrate. I did not come here immediately after drinking a hot chocolate because I care about sound. I respect sound.
So how did we get onto Velvetizer?
Well, point number two was that if Sally Hawkins came up in conversation, perhaps with a Mike Lee fan who'd enjoyed Happy Go Lucky, or someone who'd seen her turn in Blue Jasmine and said, oh, I like that Sally Hawkins, I might say, yeah, did you watch The Shape of Water? And they would invariably go, yes, I did watch it. That's how I found out about her.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. If someone's bringing up Happy Go Lucky,
sure,
and then you're saying the mega mainstream Shape of Water, you're going to look like an absolute cunt.
But that's what I'm seeking in those conversations. I want to leave people confused as to whether I do know films or not. You know, I want to. You know, someone will say, "What have you got a film suggestion for me?" And I'll say, "Have you seen Jurassic Park?" You know, that's a really good one. It's a little known. You know, rawr.
Yeah, it's so frustratingly annoying because you think you're having a joke, but the thing is, you also don't really know enough about film
or enough people to have this conversation with. That's the other thing,
right?
Yeah.
I get the wonderful thing about point two is I get the thrust of what you're saying.
Yeah.
The example you used
didn't work at all. No,
no, it did.
Well, how about this? What about number three?
It worked. It showcased what a fucking annoying little shit you are.
No, yeah. Well, that's kind of a prerequisite before anything that I say. That's not. How about this one? Number three. Number three, yeah? Someone says to me, oh, I love Step Brothers, that film Step Brothers. Have you seen it? And I go, oh, with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. I said, yeah, I have seen it. And they said, yeah, it's a good film, isn't it? And I'd say, yeah, do you know what else is a good film, actually? It's got Richard Jenkins, the dad from Step Brothers, in The Shape of Water.
Again, this is, I think you've picked the wrong thing, because I don't want to besmirch Step Brothers fans, but they are all, none of them know who that Richard Jenkins is the dad or Mary Steenburgen is the mum.
Right.
They're just.
It's a lovely little flex there, wasn't it?
Thank you. They're all just going, Catalina wine mixer, wine mixer.
That's true, they are. Let me add a number four in here.
Yeah, add a number four.
Yeah. I'm at the swimming pool, the local leisure centre, and things are a little wet, and someone's slipping around, and, you know, I say, oh, you look a little oily today. And they say, yeah, it's my new swimming oil that I'm wearing. It actually keeps me dry underneath the oil. And I go, well. Do you not have to take the oil off anyway, though? And they go, yeah. And I say, doesn't that defeat the point of... Because you're still essentially slippery. And they say, oh, yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way. And I say, do you know what else was slippery in the water? It's the monster from the film The Shape of Water. Have you seen that film? And they go, yeah. They would say, yes, I have seen it because it won an Oscar and everyone's seen it.
Thank you. Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast, the show in which we talk about the films we'd even seen in the first place. I'm your host, Adam Richmond, and joining me, as ever, is the leakiest of all the bucket brains. It's so leaky, it's confusing because you think he goes back to the tap and he fills up his bucket and it all the film stuff, it all just pours out. But you think it's not an empty bucket. You've been imagining an empty bucket, but it's actually filled also with a kind of a sludgy pebble-like substance. And it's all Lord of the Rings knowledge that's hanging around in his bucket. And he keeps trying to fill up his head with other film knowledge, and it just travels through, it titrates through the Lord of the Rings sludge and pebbles, and it comes out of those leaky bucket holes, and his name is Mr. Joe Devine.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's pretty good, man. Friend and enter, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, there you go. That's one of the pebbles. on today's episode, we are doing the 2010 flick directed by Richard Ayoade, Submarine, based on the novel of the same name. It's not called Richard Ayoade, it's called Submarine.
No, you've ruined it, haven't you? You've ruined it. Yeah, that's a long-running joke that you've been able to keep going for a long time, but you didn't say Joe Dunthorne's name before you said the novel, and so you've replaced Richard Ayoade. It's always been the author before, it doesn't... No. Do it again. The audience want it.
Okay. Based on the novel Submarine by Joe Dunthorne of the same... What? How's the joke going? You've now broken the joke. Based on the novel written by Joe Dunthorne. Based on the titular novel Submarine by Joe Dunthorne. I don't know how the joke works now.
Works like this. You go. Based on the novel by Joe Dunthorne of the same name, not Joe Dunthorne, of course, it's called Submarine.
Oh, come on, I don't do the snorts.
No, but you know, the snort is implied.
It's not smug, it's just a... fucking hell. It's a wonderfully peppy 97 mins.
Yeah.
And here's the letterboxed summary. A comedy that doesn't let principles stand in the way of progress, which doesn't make any sense. Unless you've seen the film.
Yeah.
15-year-old, deep-thinking Welsh schoolboy Oliver Tate struggles to initiate and maintain a relationship with Jordana, his devilish, dark-haired classmate at their Swansea High School. As his parents' marriage begins to fall apart, similar problems arise in his relationship with Jordana. I got you on this. I plumbed you on the first one. It was an absolute humdinger.
It was a straight plum, yeah.
A straight plum knocked you out. Tell me about... Did you see this in the cinema?
Do you know what? I don't know. It's very possible that I did. But all I remember is seeing it. That's not a very good start, is it?
No. Hey, I think this is going to be a toughy-woughy.
Right.
I was annoyed that you said yes. I'm annoyed that I got you on it.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, I don't think there's going to be anything here. I remember it coming out. I remember seeing it. I would have been, I was a younger man. I was 13 years younger and didn't have children. And I remember seeing it, and there was quite a fair bit of buzz and hype for it. And I remember thinking, yeah, that was all right. And I never thought of or saw it again.
Yeah.
And then... popped it on for our podcast that we do, and I was pleasantly surprised. I think it's almost I could consider it a work of art, in that it's a coherent vision. It's complete. It's got something to say. It's got a consistent aesthetic. There's no compromise at play. it doesn't speak to me anymore.
No.
And that's my only problem. The way in which I watched it really underlined that. I was about an hour or so into it, watching it, and my son woke up and I had to pause it and I had to go in and settle him. And that was it. That was the end of the evening's viewing, and I had to pick it up the next day. I was like, well, yeah, this is my life now. My life isn't being a 15-year-old schoolboy struggling with trying to get off with girls. This is it. This is how do I live? And
my life now is being a 15-year-old schoolboy struggling with having got off with girls and now having to pay the consequences of that by settling your young child.
So it couldn't have less. I couldn't be further away. There are the moments where I recognise myself, and I recognised the horrible teenage moments of when you're with a girl and you've got off with each other, but then you've got nothing to say. There's loads of great one-liners in it. The dialogue's pretty good, but yeah, fundamentally, this means nothing to me.
Yeah, I mean, it similarly doesn't speak to me either.
You know, before when we did Chat About the Beach, where I used to do my homework,
yeah,
and I'd read the book beforehand. This came out in my early 20s, and I stopped doing my homework.
Right.
This
yeah.
is post Fight Club.
You were an adult by then, and you're like, no, I'm not doing any homework. I'm just going to wing it.
No, it's more like I've realised you shouldn't read the book before.
Right.
And then I saw the film and thought, well, I'm not going to read the book of that. That was perfectly pleasant.
Yeah.
And then it's just been one of those things. I've only ever seen it in bookshops with the film cover. And I'm never, ever, ever going to read a book with the film cover on.
No, that's a kind of, it's an unusual thing, isn't it?
It's not unusual. It's how that book, that's how people want to engage in books. It's like, oh, I saw the film and that's a film, is it? Oh, I'll read the book.
Sure.
There's no judgment there. Although
sure.
there is.
I mean, there definitely is.
Listen to my tone and yeah. you'll see that I'm...
There's no judgment there, scum.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'll read American Psycho with the Christian Bale front cover on it. Jesus Christ. Anyway, I'm not going to read that book now because I've seen the film. I want to do my... Now I'm really grown up and I really want to do my homework for the podcast. I haven't managed to do that, but I did manage to read a fair good chunk of it online.
It's first person, isn't it?
It's first person, and it is... You get the sense that the character is a lot darker. The book is a lot darker, and
yeah.
Oliver Tate in the book is a lot more of a... He's not a psychopath, but he's a horrible bully little git.
Right. Well, that's interesting because like I kind of... Watching the film, knowing about the book, I was unsurprised that Richard Ayoade would have been attracted to the character because it seems to match the social awkwardness and that kind of, you know, that wry, weird, observational perspective that he has for his comedy character, which I assume is based on some kind of, you know, personal truth. And in an interview with, I watched a Film 4 interview, he kind of acknowledges this because he says he liked the character because usually coming-of-age stories are written semi-autobiographically and they're based on like the experiences of authors who are quite kind to themselves. He says they turn into stories where the character is simply waiting for the world to realise how great they are. Whereas in this film, in this book, the character is compromised and is mean and does mean things and the world isn't going to realise how great they are. You know, so I can see that that's why someone like him would be attracted to a character like this.
It's weird. I just you hear a quote like that, and I just think, what books have you been reading? Like Catcher in the Rye, mate. It's all in Catcher in the Rye, and that's the biggest one of these.
I haven't read that.
That's okay. Read it. I mean, maybe okay. Don't. People say if you don't read it when you're a teenage boy, and you can only be a teenage boy when you read it, you'll find Holden Caulfield, the hero of the book, insufferable.
Right.
I haven't, and you know what? Oh, it's I'm 40, 42 now. I think I've read it, must have read it in my teens. I read it again in my 20s and once again in my 30s. It's time to revisit Catcher in the Rye.
For the fourth time.
see if I've outgrown.
Have you changed yet?
If I've been changed. But I don't know what Ayoade's reading. Like, have you read The Wasp Factory?
No.
That's a great example by Ian Banks, where it's first person and the narrator, this kid, is a psychopath. It's very dark, set in Scotland, and...
Are these not the exceptions to the rule, though?
No, because these are the big... What else is he talking about?
I don't know. I don't know any books. I mean, he's not talking about books anyway. He says coming of age stories.
Okay.
So I assume he's mostly talking about films. He's in an interview with Film 4 talking about film, and he says coming of age stories.
But he's talking about things to adapt, material to adapt.
No. He's just saying why he likes the character.
When did Rushmore come out? He's watched Rushmore and thought, I really want to make Rushmore.
Right.
come on, that's what he's done.
Do you hate him?
No, because as I said at the beginning, Rushmore, it's a decade after Rushmore,
yeah.
Over 1998. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't have, it's very stylized submarine.
Yeah.
It's got,
yeah.
And he bangs on about how he loves the French New Wave, but it works. He kind of completely commits to this idea. It's got a real like energy to it.
Sorry, by the way, being that like the main character sort of sees his life as a movie or movie scenes,
yeah.
And then like all these different, there are lots of different styles, all scenes filmed differently as if they are movie scenes, right?
Mm.
That's what you mean by the style.
Yeah, the Super 8 footage in there.
Yeah.
But then even within that, when it's just a normal. It's got a lovely grainy texture to it, and he shoots whales wonderfully.
It looks like a movie.
He's really gone for it. But it's consistent and it's considered. And you can't take that away from Ayoade, but it is still
the way you say his name. It's like you spat it out the side of your mouth there.
But the idea that these films don't exist, and he's like, there were all these coming of age stories where they're all really kind to themselves. It's like, what are you?
Let me just say it again. And also, this is a précis of what he was saying. This isn't a direct quote, but it was along the lines of who are usually quite kind to themselves. Not always. He's not saying that other films like this don't exist. It's like you've heard what you've said and you've taken it to the complete extreme. To say, he says everyone. Well, no, he's in an interview, he's being asked about why he likes the character. And he says, the point I was making, and the point I think he is making, is that he can identify with the character more because he's a guy who seems like he hates himself and is very self-deprecating, right? So I think what he's saying is that of lots of other stories that he's read where the character is waiting to be, you know, to show the world what they've got, what he says is that he can identify more with this character that isn't good and that just realizes how bad he is over time.
Right, and I'm suggesting that he seems to be positioning himself as someone who is doing something out of the norm. It's like, oh, everyone else is doing these very like safe, kind things.
There you go again, everyone
and
else.
And he's like, you're not the countercultural thing here, mate.
You don't think submarines a bit countercultural?
No fucking way.
It's quite unusual, isn't it? Like as a film, you like it more than I do. I don't know why I'm defending it or arguing on behalf of it. But it's an indie movie. It's not like a normal mainstream film.
It's pretty mainstream. It's not. It's an indie mainstream. It's very indie mainstream.
It's indie mainstream. That's different. That's like canon of the left, you know?
Right. But it's they've shaved off all the edges of the novel, which I've only read 20 or 30 pages of. But I've established the tone of, I've seen like this fairly, fairly meaningful like chunks I've read, and you get, I was like, oh, the character here is a horrible
bully. I understand.
If you read 20 pages of American Psycho or Fight Club or
Lord of the Rings.
No, that's not first person.
Oh, first yeah, it person, is in my version of it is.
First person novels, you instantly get the sound and tone of someone's voice and you're in their world.
Sure.
Remains of the Day.
Right.
Hang on. I'm actually looking at Remains of the Day on my bookshelf. I just want to check.
Right, you're looking at the bookshelf, yeah.
Don't look at your bookshelves. Ah, there we go. Tonight I find myself here in a guest house in the city of Salisbury. The first day of my trip is now completed, and all in all, I must say I'm quite satisfied. This expedition began this morning, almost an hour later than I had planned, despite my having completed my packing and loaded the Ford with all necessary items well before 8 o'clock. Now, we're instantly in this man, like he's a fastidious man. We know that's the whole book. That's the Remains of the Day, right?
Uh-huh.
I could read the whole book for you now.
Uh-huh.
We might have to pay royalties for that now.
Right.
For now.
Uh-huh.
But it's just in the same, when you start reading Fight Club, the tone of it, who this guy is, you get it. And I'm just going to put my reputation on the line and going to suggest that I've read 20 to 30 pages of Submarine, and I get a sense that it is far, the character of Oliver Tate in the novel is far more of a cunt. He's far more horrible. It's a far darker iteration of the character.
Uh-huh.
And that's fine. I'm not thinking Iwadi's sold out. I'm just saying it can't do that. It can't play that. And that's why it's mainstream. It's taken all the edges off.
Sure, sure.
Right?
I've written something in first person.
Can you read something in third person?
I wrote this years ago. You just reminded me of it.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy.
Richard Iwerdy says he can't think of that many coming-of-age stories that are British, yeah? In the same way that you said before, slandered him by saying that you're going to say they're all British and what's he talking about? But he said the ones he can think of are from the 60s. He said Billy Liar, If... Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner. But he said it's not a territory that comes up in British films very often. And I wondered if you could think of some.
Does he name check If?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a coming-of-age film.
Well, he appears to think that it is.
Yeah, of course he does, because he's a fucking... He doesn't understand.
He's a fucking director, filmmaker.
Listen, I don't want to brag, but I wrote an essay about If. I've watched it. It's not a coming of age. Just because a film is about, it's got teenagers in, doesn't mean it's a coming of age film. That film is about kids at a really strict authoritarian boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
And Malcolm McDowell just kind of getting dehumanized. It's almost like Full Metal Jacket, but in a boarding school.
In the 60s.
It is set in the 60s. He's not that thick.
It's a 60s film.
Yeah, but it's not a coming-of-age film in the way that you think of what a coming-of-age film is.
What is a coming-of-age film?
Great question.
I think I've got an answer for you.
Let
me give you my answer.
In my mind, it's not If. If is, at the end of If, Malcolm McDowell gets a rifle and is on the top of the school, and he's killing all his teachers.
Sure.
It's a critique of like British schooling and a certain way of life, and about crushing of individuality and angry young men.
Yeah.
He comes of age in a sense. If he, no. Let's coming of age. Go on. You tell me what coming of age is. It's not If.
It's not If. Well, listen, what I think a coming-of-age story is when a teenage character starts out with a confidence in their own perspective and ends up recognising that as naivety and realising that they don't know loads of stuff, becoming comfortable with that and generally an acceptance that they were wrong about something. That's what a coming-of-age story is.
Basically, most of Shane Meadows's oeuvre is coming-of-age stuff. Summer's Town, This Is England.
I like Summer's Town.
A Room for Romeo Brass. But this is, I guess, he can get out of it in that this is a particular, the coming of age he means is it's the first flash of young love, which we don't tend to do.
No.
And I know why. Do you want to know why?
Oh, I'd love to know why.
This is a universal experience, the flush of teenage love, right? It spans cultures, countries, you name it. It's true. And so my contention is, because it's such a universal experience, and because, rightly or wrongly, I'm going to assume everyone, I'm saying that just because I don't give a shit and I don't want anyone to give me shit. Hollywood pretty much has a stranglehold, or American films do have a stranglehold on evoking stories. They're the main vehicle. There'll be lots of foreign coming of age stories, but what I'm saying is Hollywood have got it covered. They've done coming of age.
They're doing it for everyone.
And that's because we all I like to watch those American films, and everyone across the globe will watch those and go, that's because it speaks to a universal experience and they get it. Rushmore.
Sure.
Well, yeah. Not a big, broad one. It does, it speaks to that. The embarrassment of Jim fucking a pie. Everyone gets it.
Sure. Even in the darker end, you know, when I was watching interviews with Richard Ayoade for today's podcast, he mentioned that Avi Kareen, who's the brother of Harmony Kareen, wrote The Double, which is Richard Ayoade's other film. And then I was suddenly got me thinking about Kids, you remember? That's a whole kind of different coming-of-age story.
Let's not talk about Kids for that film or just generally.
Right.
So that's why, but to bring it back to specifically then why British film there aren't so many is because the film industry is an industry, and the films that get made in England and that they have to make money and they need to make money, so therefore the films that we make are period pieces / costume dramas, hooligan films / Guy Ritchie lad type capers.
Sure, and even he's mostly gone to Hollywood as well.
Yeah, but I mean, not by him, but that kind of film, I mean.
That sort of film,
It's him, but the genre, the Richard Curtis rom-com. And then I was going to do another one, and you really fucked me up.
Horatio Hornblower, boat films.
No, shut up. I fucking had them and you really fucked me up. No, shut up. Shut up, honestly.
Napoleon.
Shut up. Period pieces. Rom-coms.
Rom-coms.
Oh,
no,
football hooligans.
Rom-coms. Rom-coms?
Fuck it. Okay.
Horror.
Oh, and social realism. You know, Ken Loach, Shane Meadows.
Ken Loach, Mike Lee.
Mike Lee. Okay. And, you know, we do...
The triumvirate of social realism.
The triumvirate of social real lovely stuff. We will every now and again get someone who busts out and transcends all of that, a la Chris Nolan.
Yeah. What about that guy that, you know, the one who was a fashion designer?
No, Tom Ford doesn't count. We're not doing Tom Ford.
No, not Tom Ford, not Tom Ford. The other guy, the guy who directed 12 Years a Slave, Steve McQueen. Was he a fashion designer? Have I got that right?
No, he was a photographer.
He was a photographer.
He transcends that, and he's an auteur.
Sure, but he's British.
Yeah, no, he counts, but that he's not a genre. He's Christopher Nolan's not a genre. He's a.
Of course, he's.
What
British.
I'm saying is, in terms of the British film industry, the machine, those are the films that are going to be made because they know that those films will make money and make it back. Why would a Brit watch a fucking British coming of age comedy when they can, you know, watch the really super sexy one that's been made by Judd Apatow, and it's really funny? They wouldn't, because
no, they wouldn't.
They're already tapping in, because it's tapping into a universe experience. I'm like, I don't want to watch the fucking cast of Inbetweeners doing this really fucking budget version of something. Fuck that.
I think that's the other thing, right? Is that British films, They just look cheap as well, don't they, half the time? They just look different.
They look different and cheap and shit. Yeah. And so unless you're watching an auteur, I hate that word, unless you're watching a visionary like Meadows, Nolan, McQueen, just watching something that could be done by anyone, who gives a fuck? So anyway, that's my theory. Yeah. Have you seen that? There's a the conundrum of Iowardi.
Yeah.
Iowardi is in this baffling big budget
The Watchmen.
American close. It's just called The Watch.
The Watch, yeah.
Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, Iowardi, and I can't for the life
There's
of me
one
remember
other.
Who the fourth. It's basically Owen Wilson, but
I'll find out.
Justin Long, maybe. Did you see it?
I did watch it, but I really... Oh, it's... No, do you know what? It's actually... It's bigger than that. Have a guess. This is a person who is known for comedy, has also turned his hand to some more serious roles. He's probably, at the moment, the biggest actor of that group. The most likely to be seen in a big, successful picture. Younger... Lost a lot of weight. Made a movie about his therapist recently.
Jonah Hill.
That's Jonah Hill, yeah.
We're doing The Watch.
Do you want to do The Watch at some point?
I don't want to, but we're doing it.
Are we doing it?
You just said...
Yeah, but it's my list today, and The Watch isn't on my list. Add it to your list. Get me with it at some point.
But you're accepting that you fucking forgot it.
I'm accepting that I've forgotten it. You can get me with it at some point. I don't want a double IOR day, but I would enjoy bringing Ben Stiller into our lives here and Vince Vaughn.
That film is so shit.
Yeah, it's not good.
We shouldn't do it. Shit comedies have never worked for this podcast.
You said last week that, you know, we don't do this.
But I just want everyone to know that this The Watch would be absolutely... It's Plum, movie you forgot.
It is Plum. I mean, we could, listen, add it to your list. Don't say it to me next week, yeah?
I'm not going to.
Wait a couple of months and then say it to me. And then we'll have forgotten that we've even had this conversation. That's how Plum it is.
You'll forgot. I won't forget.
You'll forgot.
I think he must have done that and gone, this is not for me. There's no way. He said he'd rather things he... That, he would have got a huge load of money for that. And then he's come back and gone, I'd rather do HSBC ads. Iowardi's doing he's doing lamb voiceovers.
Yeah. I support that. This is actually a fantastic segue for the next question that I have for you. I know I'm not the host. When he's asked if he covets, this is Richard Iowardi. When he's asked if he covets Hollywood commercial success, he says no. And then he says... that since the 60s, there's been a bifurcation between films that are successful or that everybody goes to see and films that are considered good. He suggests that this is... He doesn't hard and fast say it. I know what you're going to say. Anyway, he said, maybe The Godfather could be one of the last of those films that crosses that divide, is in the centre of the Venn diagram between those two things. I don't think that's true. I know you don't think that's true. I have an example of a film... that I think crosses the, you know, is plum middle canon.
Before you say the name of this film, we really need to establish this is the kind of thing someone who affects to know something about films, speaking about films, who knows fuck all about films. Okay, it's not just him. Martin Scorsese does it. Scorsese did it when he started shitting on Marvel films.
Yeah, I know. And you hold a little bit of...
I don't... It's just nonsense.
I'm going to caveat, and I want you to go. I want to unleash you, but I want to unleash you in a little pen of my making, okay? And the pen of my making... the pen of my making, it says this.
Yeah, give me some...
The Richard Iowardi that you have an issue with... is the Richard Iowardi that I've reflected to you based on my understanding of what he said, as opposed to what you've seen of him directly or the comments. I'm sure he doesn't actually think, you know, the way that you're saying it. And that's the pen of my making. Now, run free, little lamb. Ba, ba.
It's fucking nonsense. It's a fallacy, for starters, that a film that is successful can't also be good.
Yeah.
That's instantly, so that instantly makes everything and how he views the world a complete nonsense. It's why people who would dismiss something like Infinity War and Endgame, they would dismiss them out of hand, because those films were the most successful money-making films of all time.
Yeah.
And they are superb. They're great. Spider-Man No Way Home, which I rewatched recently, glorious. It's everything within those within the genre that they exist. Movie. They are exemplary entertainments, and they are.
Yeah,
he says the 60s and 70s. I've got a list of the 80s, right? Films that are both critically acclaimed and deserve to be, and also boffo box office. Amadeus.
Yes.
Made 90 million at the box office.
That's a lot in the 80s.
Midnight Run, Little Mermaid, Alien, Aliens, Terminator, E.T., Robocop, Sex, Lies and Videotape, and Do the Right Thing. Uh-huh. They all are... I don't like this the idea of, like, critical... I hate critics. But they are all... great films,
sure.
And they were all considered great at the time, and they all scored boffo box office. The 90s, Heat, The Big Lebowski, Usual Suspects, Seven, Fargo, Goodfellas, Truman Show, Leon. I mean, I could go on. Do you know what I mean? It's really? Just absolutely a pathetic misunderstanding. And also, what I hate about this view is the idea, it's exceptionalism. And it's this idea that, like, somehow everything was better in the past. And everything is shit now. And then he's going, oh, I want to do stuff now. That's good. Yeah. You're all doing stuff that's shit, right? And I want to do. And it's just, it's the arrogance of it, let's all get back to the French New Wave. No, let's not. You know?
I think you've made your point and I support it. And I think if Richard Ayoade listened to this, he'd also probably agree with you and then say that he doesn't know what he's talking about, because that does seem like the kind of thing he would do. Do you want to play the box office game?
I fucking love to play the box office game.
Okay, let's play the box office game. Now, but I'm going to have to go with the budget that's listed on Wikipedia, because that doesn't appear to exist anywhere else. So we have the box office numbers from the legitimate source, but the budget's a bit of a guessing game here from Wikipedia. It's all a guessing game. Submarine, budget, what do you think?
Ooh, it's a directorial debut. It's shot in Wales.
That's right.
I'm going to say $6 million.
Well, that is, according to Wikipedia, an overestimation of fourfold. It's $1.5 million.
Yeah,
pretty
cheap. I want that stricken from the record. It's late. We were arguing about culture.
And now you want it stricken. I think we both knew it was a toughy wuffy. Unfortunately, that's a little too far for us to... the bridge to Terabithia, mate. That's what that is. Now, what do we think about opening weekend? Another toughy wuffy.
It's like tuppence a bag. Like, I don't know, $10,000?
Not that far off. It was $42,000 opening weekend.
Yeah, and now we're getting to... The numbers are so small.
Yeah.
The notion of fourfold, tenfold, penfold can go fuck themselves.
All the folds can go. We're talking about a flat piece of A4 here. There's no folds to be seen.
Benfolds, piss off.
Benfolds five times, my friend, not four.
Yeah.
Now, okay, listen, we always knew it was going to be a toughy wuffy. You prefaced it at the end of last episode. You were very keen to tell me that it was going to be hard, because I accidentally said it would be easy. And I can see that now. But let's carry that truth now into the guess for gross worldwide. What do you think? I mean, he got another film.
The critical acclaim alone gets him another movie. He's mates with Stiller. it gets released by the Weinsteins in America.
Mm. Yeah.
So, 5 million?
Not far. It did $3.8 million.
There we go. That's what I think about that.
That's what you think about that. Yeah. Well, alas. Tough one. It was a tough one.
It's a tough dead end of a box office game.
Would you like to play a different game now? The guess the next movie game. Guess what? I've worked really hard on my list today. So I've got a big fat one for you.
I love it when I just get to listen to you trying to get me out.
I'm going to get you this week. I really am. Okay, here we go. And you will have forgotten about this. There's a chance you won't have seen it, but I think you will have. A Dangerous Method. Is it Plum? Have I plummed you? It's Plum, isn't it? That's the sound of Plum. I can hear it. Mr. Cronenberg, you would have gone to see it because it was Daddy Cronenberg, and it's such a weird, like, thing that happened. I've plummed you, haven't I?
This is a partial plum.
No, it's full plum. No, come on, listen. That's the silence of that was full plum.
It's not. It's a partial. That silence is thought thinking. It's a partial plum because I didn't see it when it came out. Uh-huh. I was getting good notices. Mm-hmm. At some point in my life, I did watch it.
Yes.
And I can't remember a fucking thing
mate,
about it.
I've nailed you first time. It's been so long, so many weeks since I've plumbed you first out of the gate.
I mean, you plumbed me right back. I plumbed you Submarine, you've plumbed me Dangerous Method. Are you sure you want, this is the film, you think, you know, you want numbers on this podcast. Who the fuck is... No, I think, who's watched this? Who's gonna listen to the Dangerous Method episode?
Well, I don't know, but there's something about it that makes me want to watch it.
Okay, I just want you to know you've picked something.
That nobody's seen.
I've not done this. You've picked something very obscure. You've been telling me to pick things like Constantine and V for Vendetta. And then you've picked fucking Dangerous Method. I'll watch this all day long. I love Cronenberg.
Yeah, I want to watch it too.
Keira Knightley.
I don't know anything about Cronenberg, so, you know, I thought also it could be a good education for me. We could call it the Cronenberg episode. We're not going to do that.
We could do, because I can talk to you about Existenz all over again.
If you want me to watch one of his other films,
just one.
As well as A Dangerous Method, I could do that. I haven't got all the time in the world, mate. But
you need to see Dead Ringers. You need to see The Fly.
I've seen The Fly.
Okay. You need to see Existenz.
Okay, so you pick one between Dead Ringers and Existenz, and I'll watch it. Dead Ringers is the one where Jeremy Irons plays two characters,
You should
right?
watch Dead Ringers.
I've just done Jesse Eisenberg doing two different characters. I don't know if I care about Dead Ringers.
Dead Ringers is phenomenal. I'll rewatch Dead Ringers.
All right, fine. I'll watch Dead Ringers, but mainly I'll watch A Dangerous Method. It's still got Fassbender in it. It has, hasn't it? He plays young, doesn't he?
It is two of our favourites. Let's call it the Fassbender Viggo episode.
Does Viggo play Freud?
Yeah. So that was the Submarine episode. You have been listening to the Movies You Forgot podcast. Follow me on the Letterboxd at Error of Ways.
He will follow back.
I will follow back and send us an email. moviesyouforgotyouforgot@gmail.com. Tell us the movies you forgot. We'd love to hear them. There's been some really good ones.
Yeah.
Some have failed because Joe hasn't seen them, but some have failed just because they didn't understand the brief.
Some have failed because Adam hasn't seen them, like Cinema Paradiso, you know, for example.
That's not a movie you forgot.
No, but somebody sent it in as a suggestion and you hadn't seen it. That's all. Goodbye.